You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me as always is...
Mac Lacy. Alex, we're rounding out part three of our Attack of the Clones breakdown. Basically, we're doing all this in preparation for the Book of Boba Fett coming out this December. We're revisiting Boba's childhood, seeing what we can dig into that might inform the show later.
That's right. We're starting at the very beginning. Back when we were the Mandalorian Watch, we did this with the Mandalorian. We watched all the Clone Wars and Rebels episode that had to do with the Mandalorians in preparation for the Mandalorian. And then we all love the Mandalorian together. We changed our name to Children of the Watch, a Star Wars show, to better cover the upcoming live action Star Wars television shows. And not only that, we are also now covering the Bad Batch. So you can join us every Sunday night at 7 o'clock on YouTube for a live stream, and then it will be up on your podcast app after that. So that's super exciting. It's been a lot of fun. And the latest one we just did, Jonah Marie was with us, and it was a lot of fun. So make sure you check those out as well. But we're here to break down Attack of the Clones part three, like Max said, and we are starting at 1 hour, 11 minutes and 16 seconds and going to 1 hour, 42 minutes and 42 seconds. Disney Plus won't work if you try to go past that.
Yeah, if you listen to this on anything that's connected to the device that you try to watch Attack of the Clones on, while this is still happening, it's not going to let you go past that. So, yeah, well, I think that's about it. Let's just get into the discussion.
Let's do it. So we start off on Tatooine, and Anakin and Padme are on Tatooine, and they have arrived at the Lars homestead. And the first question I have to ask immediately, because we see C-3PO working for the Lars, and we know from episode one that Anakin built C-3PO, right?
Right.
Like, so I guess Shmi brought him along to help on the farm once Kleeg and Shmi got married. We see Owen, Lars, and Beru. My question is this. Did Owen Lars receive major head trauma from this point until when we see him in episode four? Because how do you forget someone like C-3PO?
Right. I get that the plating changes and he's got kind of a new look and in A New Hope and everything. But I do think that just from the information that Owen should already be able to, infer just from the situations going on around him in the prequel trilogy, he should have a pretty good idea of things going on in the original trilogy, I think. Or else be able to react more appropriately to things that happened in the original trilogy.
Of course, we're being a little bit funny here, but like you got the same problem with Obi-Wan and R2-D2 at the very least, and I guess C-3PO. You know, C-3PO was around Obi-Wan quite a bit, but you know, like we can just discount whatever Obi-Wan says because he's a natural liar who can't stop lying.
Correct. Like, who has a dedication to bending the truth, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can just discount almost anything he says because he's probably lying.
It's probably from a certain point of view.
Right. Exactly. Owen, though, on the other hand, maybe it's the Tatooine Sons. They just did a real number on him.
Yeah,
kind of fried his brain a little bit. I just don't know how you forget a droid like C-3PO. I mean,
as like talented in aggravation,
right? Exactly. C-3PO, right?
I don't know.
I am curious though. Like, all jokes aside, you know, we've got Owen Lars, we've got Brute. The same actor and actresses are going to be in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, portraying Owen and Beru. I am kind of curious to see. I think there is more to the story. Maybe, I mean, obviously, I think Owen does not realize that C-3PO is C-3PO, but I'm saying beyond that, there is more to the story with, I think Owen probably does more than he lets on. He knows more than he lets on there.
Yeah, I think so. Stories, I mean, so if he's popping up in Kenobi, there's some kind of interaction or conflict going on there between you know, maybe Kenobi and the Larses. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, we'll know probably in about a year from a year's time. Yeah. So Anakin announces he's there to see his mother, and that's when we're introduced to Owen and Beru. I am really excited to see that, like we were talking about in Obi-Wan Kenobi. I think that will be really, really cool. And then Kleeg Larsh shows up, and by galactic standards, the man is only in his late 30s, but because he lives on Tatooine, he appears to be in his 60s. And I am joking, just so everyone is clear, that is not a real theory that I have. But just the way people age on Tatooine.
Yeah.
We have to assume this man is 30 years old.
You become Alec Guinness real quick.
We switch to a scene where Beru is serving some blue milk. Hey, just like Star Wars. While Kleeg tells his story of what happened with Shmi. And it's pretty brutal. You know, like 30 farmers went out to go rescue Shmi Skywalker. And only 4 came back and Kleeg lost a leg. Tusken Raiders are no joke.
Right. And that, I mean, that gives you insight into kind of some of the conflicts that, like, the reason there's so much kind of prejudice against Tusken Raiders and everything. So there's a long and storied history, I'm sure, between, you know, settlers and Tuskens. And, but that's just kind of cluing you in, like, this stuff is kind of commonplace, but it's serious. Like, there's a long tradition of conflict here.
Yeah, and it kind of like even informs the Mandalorian a bit when we see Cobb Vanth and that whole tension between, I want to call it Freetown, but it's Mos Pelgo and the Tuskens, like you were talking about. That tension is there because of stuff like this. Like that, you know, I'm sure that story has spread across Tatooine of what the Tusken Raiders did to the farmers and Shmi and all that. So, you know, more stories like that doesn't really help the Tusken Raiders in that situation. So Anakin's kind of getting upset as Kleeg is telling his story. And I do like the sense that we get to see Owen see Anakin. They don't really have a relationship, but I wish more was emphasized in the sense of, I wish Anakin and Owen spent more time together in this movie.
Yeah. And there was more of a foundation of a relationship there for events to happen, like in A New Hope and that kind of thing. So like,
I mean, just imagine if Owen went with Anakin.
Right.
And he just saw everything that happened.
Yeah.
And that's then enough.
When he's saying, like, you know, he's too much like his father, and that's what he's talking about, or you know, that's involved in what he's talking about there, like that would inform that relationship a whole lot more. So yeah, I agree.
I mean, that would have been a cool scene if Owen went with Anakin. They kind of have a little debate of like, okay, what should we do here? Uh-oh, Anakin's lost it.
You know what I mean? Like, this is not what a Jedi is supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of like hot-headed, does what he wants, that type of thing. That would have been really, really cool because it informs everything that we know about Owen in episode 4. And again, maybe we get something like that even in the Obi-Wan show. Like I was thinking while I was watching this part, I was like, I wonder if they would do any flashback scenes of like things that took place during this time period that we just didn't see. And like, because we know they do the de-aging thing. So,
Maybe Owen went back to visit the site later and discovered like what Anakin had done or something like that, you know?
Right. That would be cool. And then we transition to a scene where Padme is coming outside the Lars homestead, and we see their silhouette, their shadow. I thought that was really cool. This is maybe one of my favorite scenes from the movie. I love just this montage, this speeder scene montage of Anakin getting on the speeder and then driving through the Tatooine desert to go find his mom. Just the music. Yeah. The aesthetic of it all looks really cool. It's something that really stands out in my mind for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's visually striking. It's an emotional crux. I mean, for Anakin, right? He's he's on the precipice of making some major changes in his character, you know?
Right. And even the music indicates that, because it kind of goes back to the Duel of Fates music during this whole scene.
And that's one of the only times you hear that motif again in all of Star Wars.
It's so like you hear it obviously during the Duel of Fates, you know, just Anakin's, the battle for Anakin. And then you hear it during this time. And then you hear it one last time during Anakin versus Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith for just a split second.
Right.
During their battle. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep. Anytime that's going on, it's just a symbol of major conflict, whether that's external or internal. So
yeah. John Williams, man. He killed it on this movie. I love this soundtrack.
Just again, how different the pop culture landscape would be if John Williams never existed. It'd be completely different.
Star Wars wouldn't be a thing. I'm like convinced without the music of Star Wars,
New Hope never would have made it. No, it would have been dead on arrival at the box office. Think about like Jaws, how much the music made that movie. I mean, that's the shark's personality, is that music, you know?
Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's too much. Too much.
Yeah, pretty much everything. So he's traveling through the desert. I'm wondering if this part of the desert is the Jedlin Waste that, you know, we kind of see Obi-Wan lives near that place. He stops and he talks with some Jawas. And then he continues on his journey, and then we switch back to Geonosis, and Obi-Wan sneaks into the Separatist base. Almost when you go in there, it kind of looks like an old Eastern church, like an Orthodox, like really old Constantinople type church inside. There's like glass stained windows almost.
Yeah.
It's very like interesting.
Iconography type. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes further into the base and and then he sneaks up on the Separatist Council, and we're finally introduced at this point to Count Dooku. Like, this is the first time we're seeing Count Dooku in the movie, which, you know, when we're breaking it down like this, it's kind of shocking that it's taken this long to meet Count Dooku in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, when if he's the big villain kind of for this movie. I mean, we got Darth Vader in A New Hope first scene, you know?
Yeah.
And then his presence is kind of looming over the whole thing, even though he doesn't have that much screen time. And then, you know, here, Dooku shows up much later. It's a choice.
Well, the thing, though, is like, you know, breaking it down like this, the first two parts, he just has such a large presence in the movie. You just remember him in the movie, you know, so much, but he's really not in the movie that much.
No.
But like, I think that's just a credit to Christopher Lee of how awesome he is.
Yeah. And just how iconic. Anytime he shows up, it's just, oh yeah, this is about him now.
2002 was a good year for Christopher Lee, right?
Like, yeah, was that also the Star Wars? Two Towers?
Yeah. You've got Star Wars, you've got Lord of the Rings. I mean, the guy is just doing some work.
Yeah, that was the height of his powers, as far as acting anyway, I think.
Yeah. So we switch back to Tatooine, and Anakin sneaks into the Tusken camp, and we see the Tusken dogs that Din was able to calm down in season two. They're fighting over some bones and stuff. So I just love those sort of connections that we get. Later in The Mandalorian, just again, that kind of stuff makes the world, the galaxy feel kind of big, feels like it's all one thing. We even talked about that a little bit in our Bad Batch recap of seeing little things like that matters in Star Wars. And I think, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this, you like to see those things. You like to feel those things of like, yeah it's connected. Right. So I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, no. In any of those little chances, just to tie everything in, all about it.
Yeah. So the Tuskens have Shmi on some sort of torture rack, I guess. Well, are they just like beating her? Like what? I don't understand what's happening there.
It's gnarly. I think it's just supposed to be generally gnarly. I think that's the impression you're supposed to get.
Yeah, I'm not liking it. I don't think anybody would like to find their mom in a camp like that, tied to a torture rack.
Nope.
So they basically have one last conversation with each other. And she, at the end of the conversation, is trying to say, I love you, I assume. And she can't get it out, and she dies. She hangs on just enough, long enough for Anakin to find her, to have that conversation, you know, because he dreamed he was going to free all the slaves. He dreamed he was going to save his mother. He was going to do all these things, but this isn't exactly how he thought it would happen, right? Like, this isn't the circumstances that he hoped to do it in. He hoped to be the hero. He hoped to be the guy that really came in, swooped in, saved the day before stuff like this ever happened. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not what happens.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that George Lucas did a really good job of making Anakin's fall all about the good things he wanted to do.
Yeah. Right?
Like, maybe beat wise, it's not as developed as it could be, you right. know, and a little sure. sudden, but like,
yeah,
all of the groundwork there he's doing that, like, yeah, the only reason he is slaughtering this group of Tusken Raiders is because he loves his mom, and he's twisted that and turned it into something evil, like yep. the good thing that he has. And then, you know, same thing with Padme. It's and same thing with, you know, the Empire comes about because he wants to be the person to save the galaxy. So, like, there's all these good intentions that constantly are being twisted and manipulated by, you know, those around him and the situations themselves.
It's really sad. This is what I love about that we're doing this for the Book of Boba Fett, but it's really going to work for the Obi-Wan Kenobi show too, though. Like, you know, when they come back into conflict with one another, this is going, I mean, this movie informs a lot of what happens in that. So I'm glad that we're doing it really for both. So yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It'll prove to have been a good homework assignment for us, I think, in the long run.
Absolutely. And so she dies, and then we get that look from Hayden Christensen that I think, okay, it's like, yeah, his acting has been a little stiff throughout the movie, but scenes like this, I think he thrives in. I think this is one of the reasons they probably cast him, is like, oh, he can smolder, but in a way that's like, he's got some darkness in him.
The angst,
yeah. For sure. So he comes out of that hut, and goodbye, Tusken Raiders. Two headshots, cut off their heads. You see the children even in the back there. You know, George makes an emphasis to show the children and the women for the later scene that we get of kind of looking up shocked and surprised, and the men Tusken Raiders are racing towards them, and he slashes towards the camera, and we cut to Yoda on Coruscant hearing Qui-Gon's voice. We hear Qui-Gon again saying, Anakin, Anakin, and that's actually from The Phantom Menace, the audio, but I'm wondering, you know, what we know from the Clone Wars, what we know, probably, again, what's going to happen in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I'm wondering if this is a Qui-Gon actually reaching out from the nether regions of the Force to, like, hey, what are you doing, yeah. Anakin?
Yeah, now I think it definitely is. You know, originally, you know, whether or not that was where, you know, George wanted to go or anything, who knows? But I think definitely now, when you look at everything we know, and from like Master and Apprentice and yep. those kind of things, when I say that, the story in From a Certain Point of View, Master and Apprentice,
yes, right.
It's same very author. Much right, yeah. yeah, so it's very much like Qui-Gon is actively leading and guiding those like who are in his kind of sphere of influence, in a very tangible, like he's audibly speaking to them and that kind of thing, you know. I think that's definitely what's occurring here,
and he's the first to do it, which is cool,
right.
He's the one that basically teaches Yoda and Obi-Wan after Revenge of the Sith, and again, we're thinking in Obi-Wan Kenobi show this is gonna happen. He's teaching them how to communicate when you've died. and how to do that through the Force. So that's really cool. We get some hints of that, like you said, in the Clone Wars cartoon as well. So if you haven't watched those arcs, make sure you do, because it's pretty cool.
Do you think we're getting Liam Neeson in Kenobi? You think he's coming back? I do too.
And I think he's coming back as a Force ghost as well. Like, he's been trying to do it for years and years, and then he finally is able to do it. And I think Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon will have that conversation, and I will explode into a million pieces when that happens.
Qui-Gon is just the best Jedi.
He really is the best Jedi.
Like, not only in terms of, he can do cool stuff, he's figured crazy Force things out, but he's just the best one. He's the only person who's gonna do what's right instead of what's the Jedi doctrine says,
Yes, and that's what we always imagine Jedi would be like, is Qui-Gon. Like, he is not tied down of I have to follow the rules. They're more like a set of guidelines, like Pirates of the Caribbean, right? It's the Jedi code. I'm gonna live by this, but the code isn't my master. Like, I'm going to do the right thing when it's the right thing to do. I'm going to follow the will of the Force above all else. Right. Qui-Gon's awesome. Qui-Gon. So he also hears Kleeg's voice, which maybe we're hearing some remnants of what happened with the Tusken Raiders. He kind of cries out. We're thinking maybe that's when he loses his leg or something like that.
Yeah.
And then Mace Windu enters, sits down, and he asks Yoda what's going on, what's wrong. And Yoda informs him that something terrible has happened to Anakin Skywalker, which kind of gives you an idea of that they're keeping tabs on Anakin. Like, they are very invested into what Anakin is doing. And then we switch back to Geonosis, and Obi-Wan doesn't have enough range, so he tries to contact Anakin on Naboo and find out he's not there. And then he finds his tracking signal on Tatooine, and basically he just records a message for him to send to the council, because it's not, he's not close enough to send that, which I kind of wish we would do more stuff like that in Star Wars, because I like those limitations.
Yeah.
I don't know, just being able to communicate like that across the galaxy. I don't like that. I do like this.
Yeah, I agree. I wish those rules would stay more consistent, I guess.
I mean, in Rogue One, I remember, and this is just the way my mind works, I was taken out of the movie a little bit the first time watching it, because they were talking in hyperspace. Like, they were getting messages in hyperspace. I was like, how's that even possible? They're in hyperspace.
And then later, hyperspace tracking is a big deal. So if you could, if you could send a message to somebody, pretty sure you could track in hyperspace.
Where they're at, to send the message at least.
Yeah. But anyway, it's also a fantasy sci-fi property.
Exactly.
And, I can just suspend all my disbelief and be like, yeah, it's space rules.
Who cares? Doesn't fun that way. Matter.
Yeah.
So we switch to R2 getting the broken message from Obi-Wan. He's trying to fix it. And then Anakin returns with Shmi's body, and we switch to a scene down in the shelter that we see Luke Skywalker hang out in A New Hope. Padme brings Anakin some food as he tries to fix a shifter. And Anakin kind of makes a comment of he's always been good at fixing things. It's something that, brings him comfort. Obviously, he couldn't fix this situation. And so, you start to see Anakin fraying at the edges here, because he can't control it. He can't fix the things that he normally used to be able to fix.
Yeah.
And so he basically just breaks down to Padme. And at this point, he promises to be able to stop people from dying. That's the thing that he's going to try to focus on. And I wish they would have made a more emphasis in the Clone Wars cartoon of Anakin looking for ways to do that.
Yeah. Maybe he goes off on a secret mission where he finds a holocron of some kind, goes investigating, and there would be all kinds of ways you could do that. I agree. I wish we had in the broader narrative, I wish we had more of that.
Yeah. Because again, that's what he was trying to do for Padme in Revenge of the Sith, trying to stop her from dying, and that ends up causing her to die. I like that kind of stuff. I just kind of wish that they would have focused on it a little bit more. And then he blames everything on Obi-Wan. He says that he's jealous, that he's holding him back. It's something that he said in part one of our breakdown. And she's like, okay, what's wrong? What's going on? And then he confesses everything that he did, that he killed all of the Tusken Raiders, not just the men, but the women and the children too. And Padme seems eerily calm through this.
Yeah, she's like too okay with it, I think. This is a major red flag.
It's not like cattle. You know what I mean? Like, that would still be disturbing. Like, let's say, yeah, like,
these are
animals killed your mom and you kill the whole pack of animals.
Right.
Still a little disturbing, but it's, you can, like, okay, they're not sentient like a being is.
Right. Tusken Raiders are people.
They're people.
People. Yeah.
And Padme's okay with this.
Anakin's like, hey, I just did a small genocide back right there. And Padme's like, I'm sorry that happened to you, basically.
Get out now, Padme. Like, what right do you, like, this is your chance to get out of this relationship. It was a mistake from the beginning. You know it. We know it. Everybody knows this.
Yeah. Earlier, I said it's a red flag. That's not even a red flag. That's the thing that there were red flags warning you of was coming. That's like the big thing.
Yeah, this is a problem. She doesn't even like, she's not even like, what do you mean you killed them?
She's just like, oh, okay. Yeah. What?
Padme, come on. Oh, Padme. I really like that in this scene, Darth Vader's theme plays very subtly. Again, John Williams is just killing it in this movie.
Just on his A game.
He is. And Padme says it's to be angry is to be human. But this is beyond anger. This is a problem that he definitely needs to get help with. And like, just imagine if Padme were to tell Obi-Wan, like, what happened? Like, maybe she did. Do we see in the Clone Wars? Do they know this? I thought maybe they do.
I don't know. I can't remember if this is like a Mandela effect when I thought Rex had his chip removed.
Yes,
in the Clone Wars, right? We were both thinking that, and then the last season of the Clone Wars happened. We were like, wait, didn't that already happen? It may be another one of those situations. I don't know.
No, I kind of feel like Obi-Wan, maybe even season 7 of the Clone Wars, he kind of mentions the Tusken Raiders because we hear the Tusken Raiders lightly in the background when he mentions it. Yeah. Maybe Obi-Wan does know about this.
And if which that's again, the case, again, what are you doing?
Like, let's get Anakin the help he needs.
Right. And like, maybe have him answer for his like war crimes.
I mean, it's a problem. So we switch to a small memorial service where Kleeg expresses his love for Shmi, and Anakin sinks to his knees and apologizes as he picks up sand, apologizes for not saving her, but promises never to let that happen again. And again, another kind of emphasis of like, hey, I'm not going to lose anybody that I love, which he ends up losing everyone that he loves. But in Return of the Jedi, he's like, hey, wait a second. I have a chance here to, again, not lose someone that I love, and that's my son, and I'm going to take that chance.
Yeah. And that's why that's such a powerful story.
Right.
And it's why like that redemption narrative is just all time, you know, it's up there.
Yeah. Man, love that moment. And then during, I guess, well, after this little service, by the way, do we ever see these tombstone basically in the background anytime else?
I don't think so. I think we're meant for them to have eroded away. We also don't see piles of burnt Aunt and Uncle Owen later either. So
it would have been cool, though. I will say, like, as much as I didn't really like this scene in retrospect for Rise of Skywalker, it would have been cool if she buried the sabers next to the tomb, like Shmi's tombstone. Like, and we just know, like, oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
Like,
that's
not, where not the that she would know anything about that, but just, right, you know, yeah.
We would, though. And that would have been cool. So R2 arrives with Obi-Wan's message, and they watch it and retransmit it to Coruscant. And on Coruscant, everybody is in Chancellor Palpatine's office. That's like the big wigs are all there. They're watching it too. And at the end of the message, they see that he's captured by droid Dakars and the roly-poly droids, which are my favorite droids, I think.
They're good ones. They're really
destroyers.
Good.
They have like a million different names. But these are my favorite ones, I think.
Yeah.
Very unique design. Also my favorite to play on Battlefront 2 when I am the Separatist.
The original or
either.
Can you do it in the new one?
Yeah, you just roll through and then pop up and pop right in the middle of some clones. That's fun. Mace basically orders Anakin to protect Padme at all costs. Don't leave her. And then Padme finds a workaround and she says, well, if you're going to protect me, I'm going to go save Obi-Wan and you have to protect me. That's what he said. And then Anakin's like, oh, yeah, that's why I like you.
He's like, aha.
Yeah. This
is flirting to me.
Exactly. And then we see Jar Jar get absolutely worked in the Chancellor's office. I mean, this is just political.
Just rammed. Games. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he didn't stand a chance. Come on. Like,
I really feel bad for Jar Jar. Like, it is.
I do too.
It is kind of his fault, but like, he was just trying to do the right thing. He thought he was going to be like the hero of the Republic. He wants to be the hero. He's the fool that wants to be the hero. Right. Poor Jar Jar.
He gets a really good epilogue, I think.
In Aftermath.
It's sad. I mentioned this in a YouTube comment to somebody, but yeah, the Aftermath epilogue for him, I think, is really fitting. It's nice.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate too that George kind of pulled back on Jar Jar even more. Just because everybody hated Jar Jar so much, but to see what would happen to him in episode 3 of basically that epilogue, we pretty much would have seen in the movies of him kind of realizing what he's done and kind of like dealing with the consequences of that would have been powerful to me of like, be careful of the decisions that you make, even if they're well-intentioned. Then we switch back to Geonosis and Obi-Wan is captured and enters. We see Count Dooku enter and to talk to him. My question is Count Dooku being sarcastic in this scene? He sounds very sarcastic. He's like, Obi-Wan, you're captured. Oh no, what will we do? Like, it's really odd.
To me, it seems like Christopher Lee is trying to make that character choice because he probably didn't have a whole lot to work off of.
That's true.
If that makes sense. So maybe he's like trying to do something with the character that the narrative is not necessarily. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's odd. He's just like, this is outrage. I will get you free immediately. And it doesn't sound like he believes it.
No, I think he's maybe meant to be showing that he's still kind of, because he's still trying to really hide who he truly is still at this point, I feel like, right? I mean, he's not like, hey, by the way, I'm a Sith Lord. I'm just fully out in the open a Sith Lord now. So like maybe he's still just kind of putting on that act. I don't know.
So, okay, I want to tell a cool Christopher Lee story real quick while we're on the subject of Christopher Lee, because sometimes you get down YouTube rabbit holes and you land on something. You're just like, I don't know how I'm here, but I'm watching this. It was about Christopher Lee, and it was Peter Jackson talking about how he was directing Christopher Lee to stab Wormtongue in the movie or something like that. Or he was being stabbed by Wormtongue, I think. Yeah. I think that's the thing. And Peter Jackson told Christopher Lee to let out like a big gasp, a big cry. And Christopher Lee is like, no. That's not what a man does when he's stabbed in the back. It's a small gasp. It's a small, and then did it for him. And then Peter Jackson describes like, oh yeah, I remember this guy was a British intelligence officer in World War II.
Christopher Lee has done that to people.
he's probably killed some Nazis that way. Yeah. And he heard what they sounded like when you stab them in the back. That's the gasp that they make.
He's so gnarly.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Basically, Christopher Lee was James Bond.
No, he was like the real life, and he was one of the real life inspirations for that kind of like he kind of was the archetype for the modern secret agent type role. But he's so crazy.
What a life Christopher Lee lived, right? Yeah. That is crazy.
He was into like symphonic metal too. He released like a symphonic metal album
with Nine Inch Nails. Is that right?
I don't know. I don't know all the details. I need to listen to that.
Yeah.
listen to the new Christopher Lee mixtape.
It's crazy. So basically he's talking to Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan says that he's been tracking Jango Fett and he came here, and Dooku says, no, we don't know anybody named Jango Fett. The Geonosians don't trust him. Here, bounty hunters really do get a bad rep, right? Like, bounty hunters are people too. But in Star Wars galaxy, bounty hunters are like really bad.
To be fair, name a bounty hunter who's also a good person in Star Wars.
Din Djarin.
But
he's kind of beyond a bounty hunter now.
He was a bounty hunter, I don't know.
Right.
He was a super good person either.
He's kind of beyond being, he's Mandalore now. So, so who knows with him. By the way, which we might want to bring that up towards the end of the season 3 stuff. Talk about that real quick. Okay. This is crazy. Right here, Count Dooku basically says he's sad and they've never met before. So Count Dooku and Obi-Wan have never met before. And then he reveals that he was Qui-Gon's master. That's the first time we're learning that in canon, like in terms of, when this came out, we had no idea Count Dooku taught Qui-Gon. And so that's kind of the lineage that they have there. Yeah. And Dooku reveals to him at this point that the Republic is being controlled by the Dark Lord of the Sith, and tells him basically everything that's going on. Here's my question for you. Do you think Dooku is seeing if Obi-Wan would join him to take Sidious down? Like, he kind of makes that offer. Like, we see in almost every Star Wars movie, he's like, hey, join me. And you can take down this guy and we'll save the galaxy. Do you think he's being legit?
I do, because of what we see Dooku is taking apprentices of his own, which is not something he's supposed to do in the Clone Wars, right?
Yeah.
And it's something that Sidious, that's kind of one of the reasons he gets ousted in favor of Vader, right? And so I do think that. I think, if you look at Ventress and Savage, like, I think Dooku is already knowing that maybe his position in this new galaxy he's envisioning is not as secure as he'd like. And he's kind of making some contingency plans and that kind of thing. Or he's maybe just trying to pull his own coup.
To me, Dooku is like almost parallel to Revan in the sense, I feel like Dooku was like, hey, I'm going to do this dark side thing so I can take him down, but ends up getting so caught up in the dark side that he never actually does it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's basically what happened to Darth Revan, of like, I'm going to join the dark side to stop this bad thing from happening. Oops, I'm just a dark sider now.
Yeah, you just lose yourself in the process. I mean, that's very similar to what's happening to Anakin. It's along those lines, right? I think that's just kind of the standard path to being seduced by the dark side.
Yeah,
or one
absolutely.
It's one of the archetypical paths to get there.
It doesn't seem Kylo Ren did that. Kylo Ren was more like, I want to be dark.
He's like, I'm angry and sad and want to make everybody else angry and sad.
Join me and listen to emo music. So it's just interesting, like the way Dooku's portrayed in this movie and even in Revenge of the Sith is so different than what we see in the Clone Wars cartoon. It kind of makes you think like, oh yeah, Dooku is a good guy that's kind of got lost in the shuffle of this all. Because you got to think, Dooku is just like as old, if not older than Palpatine. He's older than Palpatine.
Yeah.
He's older than Sidious. So it's like thinking through of like, hey, maybe this is the way that I can save the galaxy is by joining the dark side, getting real close to this plan, righting the galaxy's wrongs, and then taking Sidious down, and then I'm in charge, and then, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. In Dooku Jedi Lost, you see that, like, I mean, he's got, I mean, a lot of his motivations are centered around, like, actually leading his homeworld and stuff, you know? Yeah. He's kind of coming about it more as a statesman than a conqueror, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right. And so Obi-Wan refuses his offer, and then Dooku leaves angrily. He's like, oh, well, that didn't work. And then he gets out of there. And then back in the Senate on Coruscant, Jar Jar proposes that they give emergency powers to Palpatine. And Palpatine gets them. Everyone's clapping. Palpatine promises to lay down his power when the crisis is over. Yeah, right. And then the Grand Army,
and it's never happened.
Exactly. The Grand Army, the Republic is formed. My question is, would no one ask like where all the clones came from so fast?
Yeah.
Like, how did you grow these people so fast?
My first question would be like, are you about to conscript me? Because right. like, where is this army going to come from? Right.
Right. What does that mean? Yeah. And so then Mace talks with Yoda, says he will take what Jedi they have left to go to Geonosis, while Yoda goes to Kamino. And then we switch back to Geonosis, and Padme and Anakin land. And as they walk into the factory, they get an eerie sense that something's not right. And then back on the ship, R2 and C-3PO debate if they should go help them or not. And this is really their first adventure together. Yes, they were in, you know, episode one together, but it wasn't really an adventure.
No, this is the first time they're like partnering up, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so as Anakin and Padme are walking into the factory, the walls are moving, they're crawling, and they're attacked by the Geonosians. And Padme ends up falling onto a production line, and Anakin is slicing bugs in half. The C-3PO scenes, maybe my least favorite thing in all of Star Wars. I just don't enjoy those scenes. Yeah. I didn't kid. I just thought.
So fun fart, like fun fart.
Fun fart.
Fun fact.
Fun fart.
About this whole part of the movie. It was just tacked on at the end, not in the original script. They just looked at the whole movie and were like, needs more action, and added the whole droid factory sequence in there.
Yeah, you can
which
tell.
Shows. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like all during the reshoots, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just, they just tacked it on at the end of the script or something, but it was tailor-made for the express purpose of adding more action to the movie.
Yeah, there's not like, I feel nothing watching this scene.
There's no like, there's no real stakes. I'm like,
no, I mean, like Padme's about to get lava poured on her from the giant
vat
inappropriate vat thing, but you know, it looks
all right.
It looks like, yeah. It's like that cave in episode 2 of The Mandalorian. I'll just say that. All right, so Anakin's arm gets caught.
You've slayed me.
Anakin.
Sorry. All right.
You're good.
Got it together. We're good. We're
but
good.
You know it's true, right? Like, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Anakin's arm gets caught and welded to the conveyor belt. And then R2 saves Padme. We see R2 has jets, which we, you know, that would be useful in the original.
Would have come
trilogy.
In handy in a handful of situations previously.
I'm assuming when Bell Organa got him, he's like, this droid gets into too much trouble. Let's remove his jets.
Do some serious downgrades. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then Anakin escapes from it, but his lightsaber is broken. And then Jango Fett lands and the droids surround him. And that is the end of part 3. So not a lot to do with Jango And Boba in this scene, really the only scene that we get with Jango is right there at the end. But it, like I said, I think it does a lot to inform what's going to happen in the Kenobi show. So
for sure.
At least we got that.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Good thing for us to revisit and go over, you know. I feel like Attack of Clones is one of those that it's one of those movies that's probably least kind of on everybody's minds, you know. So it's good to revisit.
So like part one, not my favorite. Part two, very good. Part very three, good. Not my favorite. Part four, amazing.
Very good again. Yeah.
I think, and I'm excited for part four because part four, I think, is some of the best Star Wars content that we have. Like there's so many great scenes in part four of Attack of the Clones that like are just so memorable. Like this is why I have fond memories of this movie is because of part four.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, Jedi Army, who doesn't like that? Who doesn't like to just see a bunch of lightsabers? It's good.
And it's going to inform a lot about Boba Fett. You know, what happened in part four tells us a lot about Boba Fett and his kind of mentality, his mental state going into the Clone Wars and out of the Clone Wars. And while we're talking about that, I do feel like it's kind of important as before we wrap up in just a few minutes. There's been a lot of rumors about season three of The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, whether or not the Book of Boba Fett's even finished filming yet, or season three of The Mandalorian has finished filming. There's a lot of conflicting information out there, and we just want to say we're not sure, but there's something. I don't know, Mac, and maybe, I mean, I would love for you to give us your quick thoughts on this. What is going on right now? Because I feel like there was a really reliable source saying Mandalorian season three has wrapped production already. And then that was kind of taken down. Are we being hoodwinked? Is the Book of Boba Fett actually, like we kind of speculated towards the end, is that going to be kind of like season three of The Mandalorian? Or
who knows? I think it's definitely going to be very Mandalorian adjacent. Like, I think because we already have kind of gotten some reports of Din showing up, a lot of the characters from The Mandalorian showing up in this show. And then there was the whole crew t-shirt thing.
Yeah. The Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. So basically, the Book of Boba Fett, which was the Buccaneer, is the working title, I'm pretty sure. Or like the production name. And then so they had like the Buccaneer shirt and it had a little image of Grogu on it. But that's equivalent of the red cup shirts that all the crew got to wear that worked on Solo, you know? So that's like, that's not like they're releasing a shirt that's Book of Boba Fett with Grogu on it to the public, you know? Like, this is not sanctioned canon merch, right?
Right. So you think that there's nothing to Grogu being on the Book of Boba Fett production shirt?
It's hard to tell. I think it really depends on where season three is going. If Boba Fett's going to play a huge part in it, then
I don't know.
It could be like, this could be season 2.5 or something, you know.
That's kind of what it feels like.
And we get season three later.
And maybe the Book of Boba Fett's going to be a little bit bigger than what we originally thought it was going to be, because it seems like Rangers of the New Republic is no longer even in production anymore. They're not even doing anything with that. So maybe they're taking some of those ideas that they had for Rangers and kind of spreading them out amongst the shows. And maybe the Book of Boba Fett got some of that as well, because, you know, there was some hints, some rumors that Mayfeld, Cobb Vanth might be in the Book of Boba Fett. So,
right. Yeah.
We'll see.
To me, because they did so much in season two to set up this whole shared universe thing. Yeah. Like, obviously Star Wars has always been a shared universe, but it's specifically focusing in on the same kind of group of characters for all the TV stuff, like the live action TV shows. I don't even know how important it is to delineate between Mandalorian season three and the Book of Boba Fett. You know, it could, like, right. when we're looking at it 10 years from now, this stuff could all just roll into one thing. You never know.
Well, it's kind of like the Marvel movies, right? Like, sometimes they jump around in the timeline, but they're all progressing the story forward.
Right.
That's basically what the Mandalorian verse, that's what I'm going to call it, the New Republic era is doing, right? Like, I would imagine. The
Mandoverse is way better.
Mandoverse. The Mandoverse. So that time period, I kind of feel like they're pushing the story forward. So like whatever's happening in the present day, because we're assuming that there's going to be flashbacks in the Book of Boba Fett. Whatever's happening to Boba Fett in the present day is still pushing that narrative forward. And we'll see maybe what's happening with the Mandalorians and hear a little bit what's happening. I don't know. All I know is that there was a good source saying basically season 3 of The Mandalorian wrapped, and then they kind of took that down. I don't know if that was taken down because it was actually the Book of Boba Fett has wrapped, but part of me is concerned. Like, I hope Mandalorian season 3 was actually wrapped and we just didn't know about it and they filmed all that, because Pedro Pascal's schedule is getting very, very tight. With all the shows and productions that he's involved in, because if they did not wrap season 3 of The Mandalorian, we might be waiting for season 3 of The Mandalorian for a little bit.
Right.
Basically is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget that. I mean, season 1, he was basically a voice actor.
That is true.
So, I mean, they could go that route again.
That is true.
I think if anything, if we're getting into talking about the conflicts between like the Children of the Watch and Mandalore as a whole, it'd be really important to have the ability to take his helmet off.
I agree.
You're going to be exploring what that means for the character and that kind of thing, you know? But you know, there is more room there when you're dealing with a helmeted character.
That's true.
If that makes sense.
That is true. So we'll see. We'll see like if the Book of Boba Fett almost stands as a proxy season, like almost like you said, season 2.5, it could work in the sense we know it's going to be its own thing, but like in terms of moving the overall story forward, it could do that. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping we get more information soon. This has been really fun. This has been a fun part 3 breakdown of Attack of the Clones. Part 4 is going to start at a minute 42 and 42 seconds and then go all the way to the end. So make sure you join us. And by the time you're watching this, this is actually part 4 is going to come out next week. So we will be finished totally with our Attack of the Clones breakdown and our Book of Boba Fett rewatch. That part of it will be complete. And then probably later in August, September, we'll move into the Clone Wars portion of the Book of Boba Fett. So this has been fun. But thank you guys so much for joining us. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at COT Watch. We would love to interact with you over there. And make sure you join us for our Bad Batch recaps on YouTube live stream 7 o'clock. And then of course it'll be on your podcast app after that as well. And there's been a lot of fun. If you've not watched The Bad Batch yet, do it. It is actually very, very good. I was kind of hesitant about it at first. I wasn't sure if it was going to be good, but it's amazing. So make sure you watch it.
Yeah. Patrons, you'll probably already have a commentary episode up by the time this is coming out. So, you know, check for that and everything. If you're not a part of our Patreon community already, it's really cool. We do a bunch of bonus content and stuff over there. And then we do even more, you know, when we're in season on a show and that kind of thing. But like right now we're doing season 2 of The Mandalorian episode commentary track. So we're watching it. You can, you know, throw our voices on and watch it kind of with us and hear our real time commentary and stuff like that. So if you're interested in that, go check out the Patreon. My band Carpool Kids just dropped a new song. I think we've been ending videos with it maybe, but go check it out. It's called Don't Cry. You can find it on all the music stuff. I think that's it, right? So we'll just see them for the next Attack of the Clones breakdown part 4. We're wrapping it up.
Yep. So we've got this, then Bad Batch recap part 4. So make sure you check it all out. We love you guys.
Yep. And until then, keep the watch.